Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. His name is Paul Huddle. We're brought to you by RacePlace.com, the Challenged Athletes Foundation, RunCatalina.com, and you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or Babbittville.com. So, Huddle, we have the Tour de France.
Tour de France, Bob.
Yeah. So what are you thinking from watching?
As usual, you know, this takes up more time out of everyone's summer than anyone wants to because you still have to work, but you have to devote 5 hours to watching it every morning, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely, yeah. You have to get up. Now, you're on, you don't have to get up at 3 a.m. to watch it, though.
No, you're correct. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, I'm home, so I can watch it here. But it's been, obviously, everyone's, you know, who's watched it has seen all the highlights and everything, but the biggest news to me and the biggest bummer is that those two guys, Tony Martin and and Cancellara, are out from crashes. Because when you see those guys up at the top in the prologue, you know, remember people who won used to always be right up there.
Exactly.
And you see what
Tony Martin
when you
fire.
See what he did in that what was it, sixth or seventh stage, and he just launched right at the end and won that stage. It was awesome.
And held off the pack.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
It was weird, though, when I watched his crash. I couldn't quite figure it out because there wasn't anybody around. I mean, there was guys around him, but it was almost like he just sort of lurched to the side and just went down. I don't know if he flatted or what happened, but it was pretty wild. The guy who I'm excited about is TJ Van Garderen, obviously.
Well, because he's a
American.
U.S. guy.
Come on.
Look at you. He's an American.
I love it.
You got to vote. You got to cheer for your Americans.
Now, are
you? What?
You didn't get to see any of it, right? You weren't
I obviously there's a lot of people over there watching live, but
right.
No. I've just seen a little bit on the TV here.
Now, over the years, we covered a lot of Tour de France. I remember we used to have Dan Ossipo on every week during U.S. Postal's run with Lance.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I don't know about you, but I after the whole Lance thing, and then I think what really turned me off was the Floyd Landis the following year, because then I felt like I was really buying in.
Every year.
It just felt like a kick in the gut. You felt like that, gosh, you know.
Someone's going to punch you in the stomach as soon as you're halfway
through.
As
soon as you believe a performance.
Yeah, then it's over.
As soon as you believe a performance. So is your feeling that it's cleaner now than it was? I don't know.
You know what? It's one of those things. I think like a lot of people, you're just a little bit jaded, and you watch it because it's a beautiful sport, and you just sit there and don't want to know. You know, I mean, it's sad to say that, but that's kind of how I feel. I mean, I really like watching it, and I still admire these athletes. They're amazing. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's
I'm not falling for it again, Bob.
No, I'm waiting until
what do they say? Fool me once.
Fool me 38
fool
times.
Fool me 40 times and I'm out, Babbitt. Here I am still watching it. No. I love cycling.
When we've had Chris McCormick on in the back in the past, and we've talked about the racing in Europe. And he was the one who was saying, you know what? If you want to see where the real athletes are.
Yeah.
In terms of triathlon.
Yeah.
It's in Europe.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, that time he was talking Michael Raylert, Andreas Raylert, and we didn't know a heck of a lot about those guys.
Yeah.
And do you still see him from being over in Europe now?
Yeah.
Do you feel that's where, now, if you look at the top guys going into Kona, you got Jan Frodeno, you've got Sebastian Kienle, obviously.
Still got Freddie Van Leerd. You still got a lot. I mean, Andy Bocher.
Yes.
You know, there's so many guys and there's so many women. I mean,
yes.
The races, I completely agree. I think when you're over here in the U.S. and all you see are the U.S. races and you hear about the U.S. athletes, you do get very U.S.-centric in your thinking. And now that I'm over there all the time, I don't hear anything about the U.S. I mean, I obviously follow the races when I follow them, but you're so much more focused on the European races. And the racing over there is very different. I mean, the courses are very different. The roads are so narrow.
More technical?
Much more technical,
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the races that, my region is Spain and France, and between Aix-en-Provence, Barcelona, and Mallorca, those are all very tough, very technical courses with a lot of climbing and a lot of, you know, narrow roads and descending. And,
wow, with
I mean, when you have, I mean, there's a guy, here's
the
name that no one will know, Sylvain Soudry. Sylvain Soudry is a French athlete. He mainly races in France, but he also does some of the races in Spain. He's won Ironman 70.3 Barcelona, and he won it when it was a challenger race prior to that. But the guy can ride a bike, and he can literally win a race on 70.3, especially on the strength of his cycling. I think he finished the first of seven Ironman races he's ever done in Nice this year, where I think he ended up fourth or fifth.
Right.
But you know, you would never know about a guy like that, but he's an amazing 70.3 athlete.
Yeah, on a course that's technical.
That's technical, and right. Obviously he's a hometown boy. He probably knows those courses like the back of his hand, and that really it really helps to know those descents. You know,
the other thing that's interesting, it used to be, you know, Craig Alexander, Chris McCormick, all the Aussies had to come here, right?
Yeah.
They had to come to the U.S. and train and race because yeah. that's because for a while there, Australia had Ironman Australia, and then the International Triathlon Grand Prix went away. A lot of their racing went away, but now you with Melbourne, with all the 70.3s and everything else that's out there, it's changed significantly.
Yeah. No, it definitely has. I mean, but the thing that I think that's the biggest learn, the thing I've learned is this is truly a global sport now. You know, we have to look at it as a global sport because there are great athletes and great events right. all over the world.
Speaking of a global sport and speaking of global athletes, let's bring in Austin Murphy from Sports Illustrated, one of the premier athletes on the planet. Not Austin. How the heck are you?
A, I'm late and I apologize. And B, I am global in the sense that I'm round.
yes. I like that.
Spearish, yeah.
So is it hard for you not to be at the Tour de France? Because how many years in a row were you out there covering that thing?
Well, there were, you know, had a good run during the reign of Lance, and then there was this residual, you know, we were there for Floyd and then had to react quickly.
Yeah.
I think it was still on the plane when they took that one away from him. But, I've learned since then. I was actually out on a ride today with a guy who was asking me how clean I think guys are and
yeah.
how clean I think the Peloton is. And I just had to say that one of the lessons I've learned is that you can only embarrass yourself by declaring the Peloton to be getting cleaned up, and you know the other shoe is always ready to drop. And that said, I mean the racing has definitely been more human and plausible since the biological passport.
Right.
But anyway, I haven't been since. It was a scam, really the scam of my career. I'm in year 32 at SI. And in the summer of 2012, I just glommed on. I usually was a Winter Olympics guy, and I said,
right.
"Hey, you know the Brits are going to be pretty good in the Velodrome, and why don't you add me to the Olympic coverage as a sort of a utility guy? I can do beach volleyball on the off days." And they said, "Okay, fine. You can be part of our Olympics coverage," and a few days later, I emailed them back and said, well, as long as I'm going to London, why don't I, you know, Wiggins is probably a favorite for the tour. Why don't I go over to France for a few days and then I'll just head right over to London, you know, won't have to buy another plane ticket. I didn't tell them that there was an intervening week and that they would be putting me up in Paris for 4 or 5
days. Smart man.
I haven't been back to the tour since, but that was a great tour. And I'm really enjoying this one. Rest day tomorrow, but just strange that the one day we thought there would be carnage on stage 4 on the cobbles.
Yeah,
it's sort of the quietest day so far.
And Huddle was just saying it's such a bummer with Tony Martin out,
Cancellara
out. I mean, those are two guys who you'd figure, especially Martin, seemed like he was really on fire.
Yeah, but if you remember last year, I mean, a lot of the big guns out early. You know, Froome even before he went over a single cobble on stage 5, and Contador hit a seam in the car, you know, hit a pothole on a descent. He was gone early. But those two guys. There are always going to be casualties. And it's always shocking in the moment, and then you know, I just see the headlines are always the same from year to year. You know, surprising carnage.
Yeah.
Crashes Mar first week.
Yeah, as usual.
You got 180 guys with on 1-inch tires going 35, 40 miles an hour on cobbles.
Yeah. They have I don't know. There was the BMC rider. I forget his name. I want to say Damiano, but he had a GoPro camera on his handlebars and, you know, sweeping left, roundabout, and he was the guy who, for whatever reason, he seemed frozen and paralyzed. He just hit the dead center of a hay bale.
Oh.
And cartwheeled over it and landed cleanly. Stuck the landing.
Stuck the landing. 9.3, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Pride was injured. But with the goal, you can see video of sort of the handlebar level vantage of that spill.
Wow.
And then following up there, you know, later, it is, you know, in the middle of the pack on a narrow road with the crowds, you know, hemming in, and nowadays the crowds, the added menace is that everyone's trying to get a selfie, because why would you want to like just watch the guys ride through? You'd probably want to get a picture of yourself not watching. But it's very, it is incredible how they handle their bikes and why, and that there are fewer incidents, I think.
So Austin, I got to ask you one question. How do you pronounce the name of the guy with the polka dot jersey?
Who has it now? Oh, the tech.
Yeah, exactly.
The plucky Eritrean.
Yes.
yeah.
Nice.
Even,
nice save.
Not even going there. And thanks for throwing me on.
Yeah,
that was
come
a good
on,
one.
Man. I was like ready for that. I thought for sure he'll know this.
I'm like,
he's our expert.
He's our cycling guy. Come on.
Great.
He's from Eritrea, like Meb. There's a feature.
Babbitt, yeah. You've had a chance, because I spelled it out for you. Go ahead and give it a shot.
Okay, go ahead. Spell it. Okay, go ahead, Babbitt.
Where's the spelling, Huddle?
Come on. You spelled it out.
It's D.
No. Yeah, D is the first initial. Go ahead.
D.
All right, and the last name is?
Teklahamianat.
All right, perfect.
Teklahamianat. There you go. Yeah.
It's so, like...
What's interesting, though, is...
Just say, our feet are the same.
What I like is the fact that for a while there, during the whole, you know, the drug era where the little Colombian guys went away, because you used to have climbing guys, you used to have time trial guys, you used to, you know, you had specialists.
Yeah.
The specialists went away when George Hincapie could climb the steepest mountains and pull people along, right? So now all of a sudden you're getting, you know, a guy from Eritrea, you got a couple little Colombians. That's pretty cool. It seems like that to me is more of a statement than anything in terms of the event potentially being cleaner.
Yeah, well, you mentioned global, and I love Nairo Quintana's story. But I remember, you know, talking to Davis Finney and talking to Bob Roll. Was there a Colombian or no? Raul Alcala.
Yes. Mexico. Yep.
A great 7-Eleven, and I'm not sure if he. I know he could climb.
Oh yeah.
He could
yeah.
do other things. Anyway, but yeah, that for a while. Not a Colombian. There was a South or Central American. Who was a sort of a lieutenant in the mountains for Armstrong for a few years.
Oh, Harris?
Yep,
Roberto Harras.
Yep. Yes.
There was somebody.
And there was
really good-natured, smiling guy.
Not Che Guevara, Babbitt.
No.
You're like, Che. I'm like, Che? Come on.
No. He had another guy.
Lucho Herrera. No, that was a little earlier. Checho Ribeiro.
Yeah, thank you, Checho.
Okay,
exactly.
Nice, Babbitt. Look at you,
dude.
I thought you were going for Shea.
Come on, I can spell derailleur.
Quintana in this tour, and it always happens in the first week. There's, you know, they're talking about crosswinds and the parkourers take the left or something along the coast, and the winds kick up, or there's a wreck, as there was in stage two, and the peloton splits, and there are echelons, and somebody pays the price. So Quintana loses a minute and change, and I think Nibali, the defending champion, lost a bunch of time in stage two, and it looks like Nibali just doesn't have the legs this year for whatever reason. But Quintana, I'm hoping, will sort of detonate in the Pyrenees this week. Everything you've heard about him is that he can climb. He can climb with Froome, and he can climb with anyone.
Right.
But they talked about the Fab Four, the four favorites. And not included and possibly offending him was TJ Van Garderen.
Yep. Yep.
And I love where he is right now. He hasn't taken a single false step, and you know, we're 9 stages in. So
he's hanging out in
so,
the second.
So
right?
I got a question. Are we, you know, we're talking about this and we're going into the first rest day. Is this like talking about the race when you're following Kona Babbitt and it's the swim?
Yeah, the swim is
yeah,
over.
We're doing the swim and the guys are getting out of the water and you're starting to really prognosticate and go, oh my God, look who's this guy and that guy. It's like, come on.
As soon as we get to the mountains. Now, Austin, if someone like, say TJ wins, TJ Van Garderen, he'd be a new American winning. Do you think it would have would people be skeptical? Would it be would he become a huge star in the U.S. Based on what's following the history?
Yeah, I think TJ is so talented and confident.
Right,
he's not arrogant, but he's super confident, and I don't know that he's you know, I don't know how you wouldn't describe him this early in his career as charismatic. I don't know if you would have described Armstrong as charismatic. Floyd had a flippancy and a wit. He was fun, and then he went away. But
and then he was gone.
And Lance hopes he really goes away.
I think that people. I know my. I guess the focus group or the sampling would be my editors in New York who don't really follow the sport. And there's going to be a reflexive skepticism about cycling for a long time.
I was going to say, because it's the type of thing where, say, the guy wins the Tour de France. You know, you had Greg LeMond on the cover as a Sportsman of the Year, Lance. And then, you know, if another American wins after all the drug stuff is there, is that something that, you know, people be, you know, like, let's wait. Let's wait a few years and make sure that nothing comes out of the closet here.
Yeah. I remember after when Contador ate the bad steak, no fault of his own.
Yes.
For clenbuterol.
Yes.
You know, we were all forced to, like, if you cover cycling, you have to suddenly become proficient in, you know, the nuances of VO2 maxes and hematology and
human growth hormone.
That helps. Talking to a specialist about, okay, well, how likely is it, the story, and I was talking to some PhD, and he said, and off the record, you know, there's already proof that that Contador is dirty because he's won the Tour de France, meaning, you know, at least back then.
Yeah.
It couldn't be done without some assistance.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know where we are. I hope we're not there anymore. Nibali had a turbulent offseason, Vincenzo Nibali of Astana, when I think 5 riders, at least associated with the club, had adverse analytical findings. Only 2 of them. Like 3 of them were just continental riders, so they were club guys or minor leaguers, basically.
Yeah.
But a couple were teammates, and one of them was, I think, Iglinski, who had been on his tour team. And so that's striking a little close to home. And then there's Astana's DNA, formerly Liberty Seguros. You know, the director is Vino, Alexander Vinokourov.
Oh, he was clean. Come on.
I remember he won the gold medal in the road race in London, the same Olympics I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a quieter and more disappointed sort of crowd and press row. Some of the British writers are very knowledgeable about cycling, bothering him and some of the other guys. And boy, there were some hostile questions at that press conference. And Vino could care less. His attitude was, you know, ask away. You got nothing on me. And he, you know, he left with the gold medal. Anyway, Astana, hopefully Nibali was a clean champion. And I like the Sky guys. I think Team Sky got good when the testing got better. And
that's a good point.
I'm convinced by you know, they're all about the marginal gains, and I think that's I'm sort of sold on them. And here I go again. I'm hearing myself say this.
You're falling for it.
Yeah. That said, I mean, Froome looks like the man. I said the Fab Four. I think Froome looks like kind of the guy. And there are three very talented backup singers, maybe, or four.
Three Pips. There's a couple of Pips out
right,
there.
The Pips, thank
exactly.
you. I'm going to actually.
You can use that. You can use it. Chris Froome is Gladys Knight.
Look at Babbitt. You're going to be in Sports Illustrated.
No, he's not going to give me credit. He's going to take that.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it works,
Huddle. Okay, all right.
It's like I come up with an idea, and Austin becomes a, you know, gets a special award.
Genius.
From it. But you know what's cool is Austin came down here a couple months ago, Huddle, to spend some time with Rudy Garcia Tolson and Blake Leeper.
Why wouldn't he?
You know, the guys were in studio last week, and. You had met Rudy before, but I don't think you'd met Blake before.
No, read about him thanks to you and just you know you fall pretty hard for a guy like that.
It's pretty special.
That feature needs to get written. I need to come back down and hang out with those guys for a few days.
Yeah.
What were you telling me? Oh, you guys have probably been over this, but didn't they have they helped out a guy who had who had been an accident victim?
Yeah, just a month ago, June 7th, a young man up in his name is Ruben, and he was shot by a drive-by shooting. He was an innocent bystander, lost his lower leg, and Rudy and Blake and Roderick drove up there, brought him a PlayStation, took him out to Hooters, and what else do you do when your kid turns 17? Why not take him to Hooters?
Right.
But, and actually Rudy was supposed to go to ESPYs, but he's in Scotland at a swim meet. So he gave Ruben and his dad tickets to the ESPYs for Wednesday night. So that's going to be pretty cool stuff.
Those guys
understand that they're, I think that's what appeals to me about those guys. Think about Rudy. He was, he was probably bringing in 40-50K when he was 8 years old. Right. He was one of the main supports of the family. So it's that story has some tentacles to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's when you introduced me to him. Well, he was still pretty young, and remember I walked into the house, and I think my lead was, just all these legs lying around. He has, he has the hanging around legs, and he's got the sprinting legs.
Yeah.
That's actually, it would be a big part of the story, just kind of the evolution of the athletic prosthetic.
I know.
But yeah, I mean, if they're taking their boy to Hooters, I guess he's all grown up.
Exactly, exactly. So, what do you think's going to happen if Blake? He's run 47.9 now for 400. If he runs 46, he qualifies for the Olympic trials, not just Paralympic. Do you think we'll start hearing the he's got an advantage stuff?
I mean, the same people that resented Casey Martin
playing golf,
around in a cart. Are that same kind of person, but let them bitch, right? Because
exactly.
It's all good. It raises it just sort of raises the profile of a cool guy.
Yes.
And if you wanna come down on the wrong side of that one, be my guest. but that would be very. But he's got to get a second faster.
He's got to get a 1.9, almost 2 seconds faster. Yeah, that's in a year. That's tough.
Yeah.
That's a long way to go.
Yeah.
But when he ran 47.9, he didn't use the blocks. He did a standing start because he had just gotten his leg. So, I think he can. I think the kid could get. He's coached by Al Joyner, who certainly knows a little bit about winning gold medals. So, I think he can get there. Well, is Austin, what are you working on any books now? You've got Sweet Season.
I wanted to ask him what his prediction was for the tour.
Oh,
I mean, he's
okay.
The tour expert. Who's
going to
win?
Books.
I mean, we're already. Well, and then we'll talk books.
I think he's talking Froome.
I think everyone listening to the show is more of a tour expert than me. But I do have to write about it from a distance, and so I will pretend to be an expert. I think Froome and those guys. Did not lose time that day in the wind, which had not the. They were. He's formerly, say he's a guy that is looking down at his power meter.
Yeah.
they're better. They were better at being in the right place. They're reading the race better. I think, you know, he fell down. He fell twice in the state, broke his wrist, and he was out. If he stays on the bike, I'm not sure if he's beatable. I think Quintana, I don't know. I'm eager to see what Quintana can do. Pyrenees this week, Alps the next, and
I just wonder if is there anyone who hasn't shown their cards yet who, you know, because it's been pretty, yeah. You know.
But all the players are up there.
Feels like Contador is kind of, I was listening to a podcast and they said he seemed a little unhappy around the bus today, lost more time to Froome and to TJ. But what I love about the fact that there are no more time trials is that it sort of forces people out into the open. You know how sometimes Levi was a wheel follower and these guys race almost by proxy. And then a few years ago, I forget the tour, but like Schleck was throwing haymakers and Hail Marys and they were all out there, you know, trying, they were attacking and it was great racing. And so that's my hope for the next couple weeks. I think Froome and I think TJ's on the podium and maybe, maybe second.
Yeah.
I don't know. Contador did the Giro and he's not a young man. And so he's either riding himself into shape because he did get dropped on one of those short, sharp climbs in earlier this week. He lost time to Froome and just didn't have the legs in the end. And hard to say whether he's riding himself into shape or whether he's just, you know, his goals were too ambitious this year. So I've completely danced around that and not answered it.
Good job. Fred Astaire is our guest, and he's dancing his way.
All right, books.
Yes, books. We're talking. So you.
Oh, no.
What are you working at?
You know, speaking of the ESPYs.
Yes.
I wrote the last book I wrote was with a wrestler named Anthony Robles.
Yes.
He was.
He won the ESPY award.
Yeah, he won the Valvano Most Inspirational Award. He was a kid who had born without a right leg up to his hip, which actually made him, I think we talked about this, Bobby, that he wasn't really a candidate for a prosthetic because
it was up so high.
Yeah.
Really the story, his mom was amazing. I remember how special she was.
Absolutely. Just, and it, to the extent where, you know, when he was bullied as a youngster, she got him used to it. She,
right.
You know, you're gonna need to deal with this. But you know, they took him in and got him a leg when he was really young, and he had to strap it on, and it was time consuming, and so he was, you know, he spent his early years just taking that thing off and crutching around, hopping around. What I loved about Anthony was that, you know, he got into wrestling, a cousin was good at it, but he would stand up there hopping on, and he'd get slaughtered. He was an easy takedown, and he got to high school, and to me, this guy was the hero, the coach, and I'm embarrassed not to remember his name, but he was in a Phoenix area high school.
Yeah.
And this guy, he would go out on the mat at lunch, you know, he'd go out in the wrestling room all by himself, and he would duct tape his legs together and hop around to sort of get a sense of what it was like to, you know, to be one-legged. And so he said, Anthony, here's what we're going to do. You are going to get down on the mat. Because Anthony is yoked, like his upper body. And this, you know, once he started winning matches, you know, he made people come to him, and he played to his strengths, and then he started winning, and then he won two or three state championships, won a national championship, and people started complaining that he had
an advantage. The guy with one leg has an advantage.
I know. So Anthony was sort of this bizarre expedient where he would have to politely rebut and say, but you could also say that in a sport based on balance, you know, that I, without a leg, am also at a certain disadvantage.
You think?
But, you know, the same people, You know, there were people who thought he should have to weigh in with a prosthesis.
Yes.
Anyway, he's now, he's with the Washington Speakers Bureau and doing great. He does ESPN's wrestling coverage. And earlier this year, that book was optioned for a movie. We sold the movie rights. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. But
wow.
Yeah, I'm excited for him.
Will that be theatrical release?
You know, I'm not hearing much from the manager. I just know that when it was optioned, I heard about that. And so it's still a little early, and I think they're raising money. Still early times, but that was good news.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Anyway.
So, Austin... any other? I know you said you're going to potentially do a movie out of this one. You have any other books on the horizon here?
No, just some. You know, like every writer, I have a half finished, half baked, probably execrable novel that someone's going to have to sit me down and say, hide this, burn this. trust me, I'm doing you a favor. I don't know. At a certain point, you don't want to, you don't want to always do it the as told to books. Although that's, you can pay the mortgage with.
Yes, you can.
With the as told to books. So, no, I had lunch a couple months ago with Drew Rosenhaus, the sort of Uber agent.
Yes.
I was in Miami doing. You know, my day job is covering the NFL.
Right.
For Sports Illustrated. And there's so I was in Miami working on a piece on a Pittsburgh Steeler wideout named Antonio Brown, who's
sure.
So scary talented. But, you know, again, a guy who's from a tough part of Miami and kind of fell through the cracks. And I guess he went to Alcorn State and they said, wait a minute, you don't qualify here. So he had a 19-hour bus trip. The 19-hour Greyhound trip always gets into the story. I'm like, oh, tell me more. who sat next to you? Were there odd smells on the bus?
Yeah.
Anyway, Antonio Brown is what I got put on the front burner right now.
Is that, you mean a feature story?
That's just a feature for SI.
Love
but,
that.
Yeah, Drew's brother does a lot of, he did Gronkowski's book.
Okay.
And so I mentioned to Drew that if there were any projects that his brother turned down, that I would always be happy to consider them.
Bring the shovel.
I can't believe that if you're covering the NFL that you're not like focused on the Chargers just because
they're the best team.
Dominant.
Yeah.
I mean,
what the heck?
Right.
Well,
right.
Antonio
yeah.
Gates, Huddle.
Oh,
got the drugs.
Yeah. Speaking of PEDs, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll come down in September, and oh, never mind.
So what's interesting to me is, and again, I don't understand the NFL drug testing, but it sounds like they sort of let guys know, hey, in 3 weeks they're going to be testing you for out of competition. They're going to be testing you for recreational drugs, so you probably shouldn't be smoking any blunts between now and the season. When the season starts, it's okay to do whatever you want. And they still got like three guys.
I know. Come on.
What's wrong with these guys?
I actually read a story on how amazing it was that Aaron Hernandez was never popped for weed because there was hardly a day that he wasn't stoned. But apparently the policy is, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm trying to recall a story that I read, but the performance enhancing drug testing is much stricter and it's year round. But for the recreational drugs, once you've passed or once you've been tested for weed, you don't get tested again. And, this is part of the union is strong and the union.
Right.
And so there are guys that literally have, I pass my test parties where everyone, where everyone is
stoned.
Yeah.
That is wild.
That's incredible.
That is wild. That's such a, it's so funny when you're dealing with cycling with people having to keep track of where they are every single day, and then you're dealing with some of these other sports like baseball and football where just sort of is a little random what they do. And you know, people don't understand we catch such a bad rap for cycling and running because our guys go positive, but the other sports don't really do the same type of formalized testing.
No, the testing in cycling, and they've sort of been forced into it for their survival, is incredibly invasive. And the unions and the other, you know, the main sports. NFL didn't have blood testing for HGH forever.
Right.
And honestly, I feel, you know, you could walk into the locker room and see some fairly implausible physiques. I don't know. I mean, I should probably keep this to myself.
It's just the three of us. Come on.
Yeah. But the other thing is, like, if the NFL, I mean, looking at it from this angle, if the NFL is gonna have people, teams play four exhibition games, 16 regular season games, and they've been jonesing to extend the regular season to 18 games, and say you make a playoff run another month,
yeah,
I mean, you're in a car wreck every Sunday,
multiple.
Part of me, in the same way that. You know, you looked at the ridiculous tour courses.
Yes.
I think, well, no wonder. I mean, who, what human, how are you going to do that on bread and water? Part of me is, you know, you sympathize with the NFL players, or you certainly understand why they're protecting themselves.
Love it.
Anyway.
Hey, Austin, thank you so much for taking time. You are always the legend. We will, when will the Antonio Brown piece break?
I think Antonio's going to run possibly the cover of our fantasy football issue in early August.
Nice. And I'm sure, have you chosen your fantasy football team already? Or do you have your fantasy cycling team first?
You know he's got a lot of time for that.
Yeah, fantasy. Yeah, I could see Austin, yeah.
My fantasies run more towards Hooters.
than football.
I'm with the guys. Yeah.
Exactly.
Hey. Good talking to you guys.
A pleasure.
Right,
Austin Murphy
has
been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by RacePlace.com, by Challenge Athletes Foundation, RunCatalina.com, and you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or Babbittville.com. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.
Would you like to be part of the world's largest sporting event? Join the Special Olympics World Games and compete alongside these amazing athletes in the triathlon and half marathon in Long Beach, California. Special Olympics Unified Sports Experiences brings together Special Olympic athletes